Listeners, it's the missus. I have an announcement to make. My husband doesn't love me anymore.
That is totally not true!
Yes, it is!
I'm usually the dramatic one, but you're saying this because I ate the last bag of House of Macadamia nuts.
These are not just any nuts. These are the most luxurious nuts. And they're too good to resist. House of Macadamia are high in protein, vegan, paleo, and keto friendly.
Baby, I know you're bad and bougie, but don't worry. More are coming soon. I got us a subscription box.
You did?
It is not just us who can get this box. Curve Among the Owl listeners can subscribe to my personalized box and try their subscription service and see what I'm raving about. Farmers in South Africa get a piece of the pie. Macadamia nuts become more available, and you can taste and try different flavors and items. So just go to anchor.fm/curva-mundial and click on the link, which will take you right to my personalized box on House of Macadamia. And by ordering from Curva Mundial's special curated subscription box, you get 15% off and a free 4-pack of snack bars are also included.
That's great.
Even better, sales from Curva Mundial's curated subscription box on House of Macadamia also help fund this podcast. So everybody wins.
So all listeners have to do is go to anchor.fm/curva-mundial and click on the link, which will take them right to your personalized box on House of Macadamia?
Yep, and I did this all for you, because I love you, contrary to what you might think.
So you say. Are you a footballer that finds their feet slipping and sliding inside their boots during a match? If so, Curva Mundial has a great solution for you. We've partnered with Technigrip Socks to bring you an exclusive offer on their new Featherlite Grip Socks. Technigrip Socks are different because they provide breathable comfort and next-level grip, but without the annoying bumps or thick and spongy material of traditional grip socks. Designed for athletes seeking sleek performance, Technigrip Socks are specially engineered with a unique grip yarn knitted into key areas of the sock, providing superior control without the bulk. They're lightweight and moisture wicking with midsole compression, so your feet feel great in both practice and games. If you've been wearing grip socks, these are radically different and will take a little getting used to. But once you make the switch, you'll never look back. Head on over to technigrip.com. That's TEQNIGRIP.com and use code CURVA15 for 15% off your first order. Again, head to technigrip.com and use code CURVA15 for a 15% discount. You'll thank us later. Welcome to Curva Mundial.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Curva Mundial. I am your host, Sal Bono. Today, I am joined by acclaimed singer and songwriter and Torino supporter, Santa Chiara. Ciao, Chiara. Thank you for joining.
Ciao. Thank you for having me.
I'm so happy to have you on, as we have so much to unpack thanks to your incredible career and life story. You're coming to me today out of Philadelphia, where you're based, and you recently moved to America after bouncing around Italy, growing up in Torino, then moving to Napoli, and now an immigrant to America. What has that experience been like living in America for you for the last few years?
All right. So I'll say this. I didn't move to Naples, but I moved to Ravenna. No, it's good. I moved to Ravenna. Some of the press situations are saying that I moved to Naples because my music name comes from the Santa Chiara Sanctuary in Naples. Yeah. And that's why I think that it's got a little bit of the confusion between all the people that, right? But I did move to Ravenna, which I don't know if you're familiar. Where is it? It's on the Adriatic Sea in Emilia Romagna.
Oh, okay. Beautiful. Wow.
Yes.
Why would actually, you want to leave that?
Actually, I didn't want to really, but I did it because I've met Ron Gallo, which is my husband, and he was on tour in 2018. At this point, he was on tour there. He had like a day off, and he handed up to the beach place where I normally go every day, because you know, when you live at the beach, you go to the beach every day in the summer. That's what you do. And we met, and you know, that's what happened. And he dragged me over here. No, we wanted to be together, and I think like the only option was for me to move here. And it wasn't an easy choice. It wasn't easy for me to leave my country, obviously, because I really like Italy. I really love it. But I've moved from touring to Ravenna, but I've bounced around a little bit in many other cities because I used to play with orchestras, and that led me to, you know, based on whatever I was winning audition or whatever I need to go play to conservatories, or, you know, different string courses or whatever it was, I had to move. And then when I met him, I moved from there, from Ravenna to Nashville, Tennessee, and then Philadelphia, because he's from Philadelphia. And somehow we decided that it probably would be a great idea to move closer to New York in order to be like, you know, airport and flying a lot and all those things. Would I regret it? Maybe a little bit. Nashville was a little bit, you know, there's something about Nashville that it could be similar to living in the, you know, country areas of Italy sometimes, which is, you know, the greenery, the porches, the, you know, the living outside in the summer and do everything in the backyard, the stuff that I really loved. And I found only when I moved to Emilia Romagna, because touring is not so much about that, but it is the best city in the world to me.
Really?
I love it so much, and I miss it deeply all the time. Yes.
So, okay. Take me around Torino, Turin, for the American listeners. So I'm trying to understand what makes that city so special, because people that I know that have seen it and been there and say this, they all say the same thing, but it doesn't get the acclaim or the shine of like Milano or Venezia is just such a unique place, so it's different. Florence, Firenze is so beautiful, Roma, like all those major cities, but Torino is sort of just like no one talks about it until they go, and then when they come back, they say, "Oh, it's amazing! It's amazing!"
Yeah, it's very underrated, because if you think about it, I always say this to everybody that asks me. I always say, if you go to Turin, if you go to Torino, you don't need to go to Paris. People are gonna get pissed now. Everybody's gonna get pissed. What? But it's true. It's true. You don't really need to go to. You know, that's not necessary, because listen, you have a beautiful panorama of the mountains. You have it. It's right there. It's fantastic. Yep. You have the Alps. You have the Monviso. You have all those. You see them. They're beautiful. They're majestic. They're right there. You feel like they're going to fall on you. It's fantastic. You open your window. You're like, ah, oh, nice. Okay. And then you have, even when you live in the city, it's so green. There is the Parco del Valentino, which is Valentino Parks, which is one of the biggest park in Italy and possibly in Europe, and they have so many different species, qualities of flowers and trees.
Oh, wow.
And when it's in season and they're blooming, it is mind-blowing to go. Not to mention that there are two rivers across the city. And you get the same, you know, when the people are like, oh, we're going to the river in Paris on our boat. And you do the same things in Turin, but we don't stink. You see what I'm saying? Like, we're not like posh people. We're just like, people in Turin are, you know, they're good. They used to work. They went to Fiat. They worked their ass off. They make the money. They make the industry. They're the one that they actually worked so hard for Italy to get it together. But Milan is recognized as, you know, the city, the industry city in Italy and all of that. But, you know, is it really? You know?
I see where this is going.
And
okay.
Then think about it. You know what Mole Antonelliana is? The museum of the cinema?
Yes.
Okay. That is fantastic. If you ever walk down there, you know, you're walking, there is those beautiful portici, which is like when it's covered. It's that one of the only city in Italy when if it's raining, you don't need an umbrella. You just walk, it's beautiful, it's all covered. It's like Bologna, that's another one, you know? Fantastic. But then you also have this beautiful, huge construction that it is so meticulous and pretty, and in the night, it's all light up.
Yeah.
And okay. it just gives you a sense that it's very majestic. Also, I keep using this word because let's not forget that's where our the monarchy in Italy was.
That's right. Yep.
So it's also opulent. It's fantastic. You have the gold, you have the opulent parts of it, but you also have the good people that really worked and really worked hard, and you have fiat, which is a completely different world. And that, I think that reflects also in the football team's situation, because the Torino was the football team for the people that worked. It was a proletarian. Is that correct?
Yeah.
My English might not be perfect, but
no, your English is fantastic. Do not worry.
Thank you. it's the proletarian football team. And then you have Juventus, which was, you know, Danieli family. It wasn't just the most cheap family on the planet. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. So, essentially you have the modern royalty, which would be the Agnelli family, when you think about it, owning the biggest company in Italy, bar none, and so many other things. They own Ferrari, they own so many things now. Yeah. But there is an interesting dichotomy, though, is that the Agnellis have the money, tutti soldi, and they own Fiat, but the people that they employ, are what you're saying to me is that they're Torino fans.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, think about it. I wish my uncle Ernesto was alive. He was the strongest and like most, I don't know, he was the greatest. But first of all, he was the greatest person ever. But also, he was so attached to the Torino, and he worked his life. And he was, you know, a humble, fantastic man who took care of his family, took care of me, took care of my brother, and he passed along the passion for touring to my brother. I wasn't allowed to go to the stadium. I wasn't allowed. I was a little kid of the family. My brother used to sneak out and go to the stadium with him because my mom was terrified. She was like, no, don't go. And you know, my uncle used to pick him up and be like, yeah, I'll take him to his friend. And then we're going to the stadium, and I knew it, obviously. But I wasn't allowed to join them because I was too small, too tiny, too young. And he used to be a tram driver, you know, the train. Yeah. He used to be a tram driver. And then shortly after, you know, like when my mom got married and everybody in the family was, you know, grown up and all, he decided to finally open a kid's clothes stores with his wife, which was my zia Donata, and his sister also, zia Michela. And he just went from that to this and to take care of us as if it was a grandpappy. He was basically, it was kind of my second grandpappy, let's say. Like, I have three of them, one on my side, my dad's side, one on my mom's side, and then I have him in addition. And He was just very humble and working and taking care of everything. And then his major passion was to read all the sports magazine.
And dello sport, dello sport.
Yeah, exactly. And La Stampa, but obviously from being from Turin, but the sports session. And then he just used to sit at his, you know, the bar sports. And, you know, just talk to his friends and play cards, just be like, they're going to win or they're not going to win and this and that. And he was the one that, you know, told me the history of Grande Torino. He was the one that told me about that. And every time we used to drive by Superga, that's what you see it. It's beautiful. It's fantastic. You point it out and you think about that. There's also that. And, you know, touring can be a weird vibe. It's also one of the esoteric city. You know, it's like that. Yeah, it's like Paris, Prague, and Turin. Might be something else, but you know, there is like, there is also that element. Wow. And it you know, it depends how you want to see it. There are parts. There's also, there is an area of Turin that has, the most cosmopolitan, you know, in melting pot and intersection of so many culture, It's just great. There is a little bit of everything, I think.
That's incredible.
And if you want to escape, do you feel like suffocated by the city for some reason? Well, you can, you know, drive a couple of hours, you are in Genoa.
Right.
Yeah, you know, which is the oldest Easter in all this in the Easter football team. Do you know that?
Yeah.
That's crazy. Sometimes I think about it, I'm like, Genoa? Really?
It's crazy because like you have that's the oldest team, and then you have Bologna, the oldest university.
Yeah,
it's wild, like to see. Obviously, Italy is known for so much history and so much vast, so many things that, like, obviously, that's why so many millions of books have been written about it all. But the cultures in each area are so different. So, what was it like for you to go from the north, then down south, then to the American South, then over now to the, like, you've kind of done a big U when you look at it, like north, south, south, up again. So what's that all been like for you, and how does that like influence your musical taste? Because in Nashville, it's honky tonk and country, and Philly it's hip hop and rock and roll, and you know, kind of punkish. It's not what you would expect. Also, someone from you coming out of conservatories, like, so what's all that like?
It's a mess. It really is. I was talking today with Ron. I was like, oh gosh. I don't really know how to classify what I do. I put it in, you know, in a genre that's not really, but my music taste doesn't really come from the place where I've been, because I was I am still, but I was a weirdo when I was a kid.
Hey, you know what? So was I, and so am I,
and that's fine.
Heroes of the world unite. That's it.
Yes, but I was like, you know, it was very interesting. When I was 3 years old, I asked my parents to play cello, which it's so unexpected. Why would a 3 years old kid ask parents to be like, oh, can I play that? And my parents were like, are you sure? What?
Like, can you even lift it? It's so big.
Well, it's very interesting, because I asked them, I pointed out for a violin, and then they got me like a toy violin, and then they just flip it, and I was like, oh, perfect. That's probably what you wanted. And then I had to wait up until I was 10, because you can't go to conservatory before you're 10. That's the minimum age for you to do it. You can do complementary things. You can, you know, learn maybe some of the how to read music, or like how to make sounds out of something, but it's not really starting conservatory.
Mm-hmm.
But I had, so my classical background comes from my own self and my strangely desire to approach it and pursue it. And my dad was still, he's really into jazz. I hated jazz for the longest time. And then all of a sudden, at some point, I think I was like 16 or 17, I was like, oh, this is interesting. I might start listening to this too. And then I was a black sheep in the conservatory because, oh gosh, she's not going to jazz concert. Or, you know, like, be careful.
Right. That's right.
You know, that's scary. Be careful. Don't go there, you know.
Right. To go from like Puccini to like Bitches Brew is like, that's.
Yes. But, you know, but I was like, oh, I don't care. If you tell me not to do something in artistic space, I will probably do it. Just bothered. So when my teacher used to be like, no, don't do that. Maybe you should not pay attention or focus on this. I was like, what? No, I'm going to do it. As a matter of fact, I had my... That's when I started. I had my obsessive Bob Dylan time also simultaneously at the same time. I vomited out of my ears. I was like, I can't. This is so... I'm listening to that and that's it. And then that opened the door for so many other things like Crosby, Stills, and Nash, Neil Young, Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and Young, Johnny Mitchell, John Prime. All of that. And this is why when I went to Nashville, it actually made lots of sense, because you see what I'm saying?
Yep.
But then there's also my mom's passion for the Beatles. And she also still is. She liked Rolling Stones. I was never a fan. I respected it, but not my thing. Much more my thing was Lou Reed and Velvet Underground so much. That makes sense, because that's the East Coast. That jaggy situation that you get. So all those things blended together in whatever I'm doing right now. And it's, you know, the way that I make music is actually composed most of the time. That's what I normally do. I don't really see there in just like write a song as a singer songwriter will do. I just probably in my mind I'm just score everything and then I record and I make everything as it should in my, you know, weird brain. And then once it's done, I'm like, all right, okay, now this might be a song if I can find the right words that this music is conveying to me.
That's incredible, because when I read over your biography, which I'm going to read to the audience, if they don't. So you started playing at 3. You began at 13, you joined your first orchestra. At 16, you founded your first string quartet. At 20, you left your conservatory to go play your own music and start branching out outside the classical world. You taught yourself guitar, bass, drums, studied all the great musicians that you just discussed now, including Captain Beefheart and my favorite Sicilian American, Frank Zappa.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, to you make this shift from classical music to singer-songwriter to rock and roll and all of the subgenres there.
Also experimental, because yeah, you know, my dad made me watch a Big Yellow Shark, and that was like a trip for me. You know, Frank Zappa. I was like, what the hell is going on right now? He's there and saying that, you know, that.
Yeah, it's wild. Because there are two things that I always feel that are our universal languages, football, culture, and music. And you managed to find a way to tie them all in somehow, which is why you're on here, which I appreciate this. Thank you very much. But all of this leads to then you nicknaming yourself Santa Chiara after you mentioned the monastery in Napoli. You gave yourself and your music a divine connection as a singer-songwriter.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel that, though, in your pursuit to create your career and carve your own path, as a woman in Italy, which is extremely difficult to begin with because of laws that are archaic and quite misogynistic, you feel that you needed a divine presence and almost like you needed to give yourself a Christian name or moniker against the backlash in order to have help against the backlash, rather, and the misogyny in the industry and the country that you were in? Not that I'm saying it's any better in America, because
it's actually, it might be worse.
It might be worse here, you know.
Or equal.
In Italy, they're very, and you can obviously tell me, but I'm just, you know, looking in from what I hear from cousins and my time there is that it's out in the open. It's like, hey, this is how it's supposed to be. Like, the men go to work and the women cook and clean and that's it. We like to pretend that that's the case here, that that's not the case here, rather, but we see what governments do and we see how, you know, things unravel. So, like, did you need, like, you find yourself like you needed some sort of, like, spiritual connection in order to get your music out, not only for your own sanity, but for you? Create your own career then.
Yeah, well, do you have time?
Oh, absolutely. let's go as long as you want.
Well, here's the thing. So when I started to join recording studios in Italy, that was very eye-opening to me, because I thought it's going to sound very little humble, but that's the reality. I'm a splendid musician. I can do a lot. So why don't I try and go? Because I had a lot of friends that there are still, you know, at least I thought that they were friends, let's specify. Right. I know a lot of people that they were and still are very good musicians, you know, producers, working in independent, you know, classic indie music industry in Italy. And you know, they worked right next to me, and I thought, okay, I'm gonna join you, because if I'm recording strings on everybody's record, why am I not? Because I was the cellist, you know.
You were the go-to girl.
Yeah, Chiara is the cellist, so let's ask her. Chiara is the cellist and the friend, so let's ask her, and let's not pay her, and let's not give her points and credits. So, you know, I've done that because I thought, okay, this is not my world. I should be learning. So it's good for me to just do it. I'm taking it as, you know, an apprentice. I'm just learning.
Right, right.
But then I found myself to be particularly good and immediate. And so I asked to join the studio, and I'm not going to say what studio, but it's a big studio in Italy. So, I mean, you know, the Italian will be, if they ever listened to this, they would be like, oh, no, all right. So what happened is that when I joined the place, I find myself in a very masculine environment where whatever I was doing, it was actually sort of like you're going out of the area of being a groupie, which, oh my Lord, that's an all different conversation that we can totally open if you're up to. But what happened is that I was just going there, working so hard, making music for other artists, learning how to do everything, recording everything and singing and, you know, producing. And then I didn't even hear a thank you. So when I've met Ron, which is the opposite of all those people, Ron let me co-produce his latest record and let me play everything, and that he's so supporting of me in all. When I met him, he was very animated for me to be like, you got to do your own things, because it has to be for your own self in the first place to, you know, just to... You suffered so much through what they have done to you, to my self-esteem, to make me feel that I was a big pile of nothing. Because when you make music and then this music get released and nobody say to you, thank you, not even remotely, then you think that there is, you know, and then you're like, oh, this is happening because I'm a woman. Every time I'm approaching some artist, they're thinking that I'm approaching them for a different reason. But because I don't want to have sexual intercourses with you, then I am not a good musician. Sexual intercourses have nothing to do with my musicianship. So don't put them together. But what happened is that when I came here, I made my music. I went on tour and the same thing happened.
Wow. Oh my goodness.
So I show up to venue and I've heard, so are you with the band? And I'm like, no, I am the band. No, but I'm saying like, oh, okay. So you're with the band. No, I am the band.
That's a pretty good American dude accent, by the way.
Dude, like, are you with the band?
That's very good.
Or maybe one time I remember show up to this venue and the guy just looked at me and he goes, are you with somebody from the band? I was like, no, I'm the bass player of Headliner and I'm also the opening band. And you know it because you have an advance with my name. You booked me, ass. You did that.
Right.
And it was just, and you know, sometimes they didn't pay me. They just be like, give everything to Ron directly. And Ron was like, no, write a check to her because this is her job. She's doing it. Right. You know? So one time in St. Louis, this, I've got to tell you this, halfway through a set, this dude goes, that's not a girl bass line. That's a dude bass line. You can't play that bass line. I was like, what? What is this?
What does that even mean?
Thank you. I don't know. The world might never know. You see what I'm saying? In his mind, it was wrong for me to be on stage playing bass for Ron, which is a very intense, you know, type of music. And that was wrong for him. It has to be a dude.
What I want you to do now is just release a death metal record where, like,
oh, wow.
And then and show like, oh, is my bass good enough for you now? Like,
yeah. Prague. You see what I'm saying? Right. Oh, and also so many times at the end of the show, when I play my own stuff, they came over to me at the end of the show and be like, oh my God, but you actually very good at playing guitar. But do you think I'm stupid?
What's funny is what you're saying, a lot of these stories that I've heard as a music journalist over the years, before I did this podcast, I was a music journalist and for many, many years. And a lot of women artists that I had interviewed or listened to interviews on, like Saint Vincent in particular, who I've never interviewed, but she had this exact same.
Yeah.
It's like, and like, that's like, she's like one of the greatest living guitarists today. Like, that's not even,
that's
and,
it.
I mean, come on. Like, and so it's just like, you can substitute the name of the female artist if they play an instrument, you know. And that's kind of like, it kind of leads me into, now we will talk calcio on this podcast. Soccer is coming up, it's coming back, don't worry everybody. But like, because I want to get into nitty-gritty of this too, because what I I've always grown up with Italian music, and I've always grown up with, you know, of course, like the hits. There was always, you know, Sarai perché ti amo and Mamma Maria and all, and, you know, and of course, you know, L'Italiano and all like the classic singles that were made in the 80s and Felicità, you know, in the 70s, the 80s, the 90s. And the industry is huge. Like, I don't think people understand how big the Italian music industry is, not just in Italy, but like all of the Mediterranean region of Europe. It is fucking gigantic.
Yeah.
And these artists are like Springsteen level. Like, I had Mike Peters of The Alarm on, and he was talking about how it was Vasco Rossi had joined him and at San Siro, and he couldn't believe like the standing ovation that he had got. It's like, this is how huge like the Italian artists are, not just in Italy, but out there. And the industry is always, it kind of reminds me of like American Idol. It's very showy, it's very flashy. Sanremo, as much as I love it, I think it's like, and I get a kick out of it, it feels a little plastic.
Yeah. But
a couple years ago, Måneskin, that band had come out and kind of like had given like a middle finger to like everything. And you can say what you want about them, and people can say what they want about them, but it felt like for a moment, there was like a sea change that, like, in terms of how rock and roll should be represented, whether it was sexuality, whether it was social issues, like they were creating something that almost, it's not the same level as like when the Sex Pistols arrived, let's put the cards on the table, but like it felt like that was the moment, because that was also at the same time Chiara Ferragni and Fedez, her husband, were like obviously like using their platform to make a change for gay rights and women's issues and beautiful things like that. And it feels like there's a sea change happening in the youth culture in Italy now. I know you haven't lived there in quite some time, but you know, do you see the same thing that I'm going at? Like, that it might not be as fabricated as it once was. Like, people, like the youth want substance, and they want their voices heard, and they want obviously respect everywhere.
Yeah, I feel like it's happening pretty much everywhere. Thank God. I don't really know. I go back every summer. Mm-hmm. I go back every summer, and I spend there like 3 months every summer.
I mean, and to me,
yeah, what am I doing here otherwise? Didn't do it this time because we had to come back and play Newport for a festival. So it was a good reason to come back this summer. But still, that's what we do normally every summer. And as much as I do think that, you know, younger generation are like, yeah, let's, you know, like it's happening and I see it, I also think that there is like this old fashioned mentality that is just, it's right there. I don't know how long is it going to take for that to change. Also, there is such, oh man, I don't know if I should say that, but I don't know if the music that's coming out, it's good.
Look, I'm not saying it's the Beatles. It is fascinating to see how like there's suddenly a risk. It doesn't feel like NSYNC or Britney Spears anymore. And I know I mentioned the older hits earlier, but like those are timeless hits, but at a time when like music was very like conservative, especially in Italy. It's very rare that Italy produces a Mina. You know, we had Mina back in the 60s, who was, you know, like Italy's Janis Joplin, essentially. But there hasn't, you know, it's rare.
It didn't happen. It didn't happen again, I think, because there is not somebody else as good as her.
Well, that, you see what
I'm saying?
Yes, of course, yes.
So if it ever happened, maybe, you know, maybe like a label like Sugar will do it.
Yeah, okay.
Maybe they'll happen. Maybe they'll happen, but it's got to be somebody as good as her. It's like, there's no, it, also one thing that I think about it, when sometimes, you know, when like people generalize a bit easily and then put it into the things of like super conservative, which it could be, but you know, there are some visionary
singer
songwriter, Rino Gaetano and Paolo Conte. Think about that. That's visionary. They were already there. And Vinicio Capossela. These people are out of control. They're visionary. And they're saying things. Then people didn't say, well, obviously there is the biggest of all of them for me, it's De André, obviously. He was talking about things that they're still so, like, on point and necessary for the new generation in order for them to do something good. They have to learn those things in order for them to go on, move on, and make their own music that is, you know, you want to say actual, even if we don't know what that means.
Right.
Because I don't know what that means. I like retro music. I do love it. I love it. But my music, it doesn't sound retro because for some reason I can't make it sound like that. I'm so influenced by everything that stuff come out and it doesn't make any sense. There's not a gen.
It's so good though. But that's what makes it so good. And that's what makes it so unique. But all of that then eventually led to, I want to go back to that thought though, actually, before, you know what, I'm not going to ask this next question, because the thought that you had and where you were going with all of this also parallels something that just recently happened. The Women's World Cup took place over the summer in Australia. The Italian women had qualified, they had played. Not a single Italian journalist was sent to Australia to cover the Women's World Cup. Now,
nobody cared. Let's be honest. It's so sad, but nobody cares.
That's what I'm about. That you took the word, but like, why? My peque. I don't understand. Because like, look, if you're putting on the blue jersey, a nazionale, but if it's the men, it's a different story. But like, when the women, they're actually in a World Cup and nothing, niente.
I know, but you see, this isn't everything. This isn't everything. You could be a fantastic photographer. You're a groupie because you're a fantastic photographer, but you're a woman. If it's a dude to take picture, art. Right. Fantastic. You can be a fantastic football player, but if you're a woman, it's weird. Oh my God, that's weird. Why is she playing football? It's even weird that I like football. You see what I'm saying? Right. I never play it. I play it in my backyard. I play on the beach. Yeah. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I like it. I love it. I'm a weirdo. That's weird. My sport was fencing. I did fencing.
Wow.
For the longest. That is a sport that I actually found that there's much equality. Nobody cares if you're a woman, you're a man. There's a mask in front of it. I used to go fence, my training. I'd rather fencing against men because I wanted to make it more difficult for myself in order for me to be good. Was I ever good? The one I never know, because I always think very lowly on myself. But nobody really cares. You could do mix. It's like tennis. You could play mix.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? Or badminton. Right. You can play mix. But you in the culture, in the football field, not much so. And when it's very sad. Nobody cares about the female blue jersey.
It's astonishing though, because one thing I will say about America is that when the U.S. women play, it's I'm watching the women more than I am the men here. it's La Squadra Azzurra, that's a different story, you know, that those are my teams right there, you know. But here in the States, it's when the women play, it's people are watching just as much as they're watching the men. So it's always, so I always try and use that as like a guide. Well, if soccer is not that popular here, or growing, I should say, it's more popular than it's the most popular it's ever been in my
lifetime
right now. Yes. But like, before this moment happened, it was always the women's side that was making leaps and bounds and getting an audience and obviously winning trophies and ticker tape parades and all these wonderful things. So I always thought that, like, well, if it's happening in here, then it definitely is happening in other countries where they're even more mad. But yeah, as you shake your head and tell me no, it's like, it's even more upsetting and infuriating now. And then when I recently read that, like, no journalist went to Australia to go cover the women from Italy, it was shocking, because the men haven't gone to a World Cup in 2 years.
No, I know. This is also very upsetting if you think about it. If you think about it, there's no, there have been a team that actually worked since the last time that we win. it is insane if you think about it. I've talked about that in another interview, because it was an interview dedicated to the 20 years of Seven Nation Army.
Oh, yeah.
And because so they ask some things, and to me that song, well, I love Jack White, and I you know, so he can sing the grocery list that I will be okay with it. Totally fine. I lived in Nashville. I was like, I'm going to see him.
Did you go to Third Man Records in Nashville?
I have not, because I thought, well, yeah, here's the thing. I thought, why would I go where everybody think that they will see him? I'm not going to do it. If it happens, it happens at the grocery store. It never happened. Then one time I went, we were at a festival in the Netherlands, and he was playing a different stage from us. And I remember just being like side stage, and he was about to go on. He was like looking around, making sure that everything was okay. And I was right there side stage. I was like, am I even allowed to be here right now? It makes no sense with the whole conversation, but it's a funny story.
That's
then
great.
I reconnect to the other one. So I was like, am I even allowed to be here? And then the people, you know, security or whatever, they're like, yeah, you're good. And he comes over and he goes, you're good. And I was like, oh, shit. And then immediately when these people from this music magazine asked me question about Seven Nation Army, actually they asked Ron a question and he passed it along me. He says, like, Kiara is a much bigger fan of Jack White, so talk to her. So we were like right there. I'm obsessed. He loves it, but I am like ridiculous.
I love it. This is
and he was like, talk to her. And I was like, yes, I remember. I was young. I was right there. And, you know, Italy was winning. That was happening. And everybody was screaming.
Yeah, 2006, they adopted that as the song.
Yes, yeah. And that was it. And that, it's a thought that I had to be back to the fact that music and sport connect people under a different level. Nobody cares. Everybody was on the streets singing the same things all the time, all together. Yes, yeah. Because the national team was doing something. Mm-hmm. They were actually doing something. I don't even remember what formation there was at the time, but it was like a fantastic, there was Buffon, there was Materazzi. Yeah. It was like, it was still Del Piero. Think about that. Del Piero, Juventus, but nobody can touch him.
Right. No, of course.
You know what? That's what I will do. I'll bring him into Turin.
Okay. Well, we're going to get to that.
I'll
don't
do
jump
that.
You're jumping the gun. You're jumping the gun. Hang on. So funny story about Jack White, real quick, just to parlay off of that, not to break your heart. He does actually hang out at his own store. I went to Nashville a few years ago. I'm serious. I went to Nashville a few years ago with my wife. U2 had done an in-store at Third Man Records the night before we arrived. I was very upset that I missed it by a day. Mm-hmm. Unannounced, they showed up. Jack hung out, and then there's a honky-tonk on Broadway that he hangs out to called... And oh man, why can I not think of it is Robert's Western World. That is Jack White's favorite honky tonk. That if you are in Nashville and wanna pull a Kiara and not go to his store and see him, he's probably there if he's in town. But it's I didn't see him either, but from my understanding from the people that work there, he actually does hang out there.
He has a coffee shop now, and he had multiple, but he opened one that was like near our old house. And sometimes like, oh, come on. Are you doing it on purpose now?
Right. Actually, he's following you. That's it.
Yeah. Oh, I wish. I would be like, yeah, come over. I will cook you dinner. Come over.
Come on.
Come on.
It's incredible. Like, as we've discussed, your whole life story is something that has brought you to this moment where you released your debut album, Worth It or Not. And now, does that title hold any significance for you? As it was said that you were going through an existential crisis making this record. Like, what happened?
So the record is called Imported, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, you're good. The record, that's an all press thing that goes like weirdly in you know. No, the record is called Imported because it was me being imported.
Ah, okay. That makes
sense. Yes. And Worth It or Not, it was my second to last single before the record came out.
Because
I have a new single that just came out. It's called What Has Gotten Into You. But Worth It, actually, when I wrote that song, yes, to respond to that question, yes, that was my first existential crisis I have ever had. You know, it's like I have a medical and psychological background in mm-hmm. my study that I did not complete because I didn't have the gut to become a doctor and a psychologist, psychiatrist. I couldn't do it.
Okay.
I couldn't get to the end because it was very close, but I couldn't get to the end because I was like, you know, I can't do it. I'm not strong enough emotionally to handle.
Yeah, that's a lot of weight.
To handle, you know, people not being well. And also my dog is not emotionally ready to handle me yelling right now. She's taking a nap and now is barking. And sorry.
Okay.
But it was, you know, it was 2020 when I wrote that song. I started to write the record early on. It was 2018 when I first wrote my first song in English. It was 25, which is a song that talks about my immigration put myself on an airplane, landing, custom security things, airport visas, and like anxiety. That was it. And then Worth It was actually a song that I wrote in, I want to say, 20 minutes. I was sitting on my front yard, and it was in 2020. We just got married, came back to Nashville, and COVID hit.
Yeah.
And we were about to leave for tour, and everything got canceled. And all of a sudden, I remember my mom called me and be like, "Italy is in disaster right now. I don't know how are you guys in Nashville." And we were just like, you know, everything is fine right here. Nothing really happened up until March, no? But then we had a tornado in March. Right before COVID happened in March, it was March 4th. We had a huge tornado that we were so lucky because legitimately this was our house. Tornado was right here destroying everything, but not our house. And so we were, I remember that to be one of the scariest moments in my life. I was like in the closet like that, waiting for that to stop. And then it was so peaceful the day after. It was incredible. Sunny. We went to get a donut. In a coffee, sitting with our friend outside, and everything was peaceful. And all of a sudden, we were like, we gotta go help. So we went to help and clean up, you know. It was a disaster, so we needed to do something. And I remember a couple days into helping and cleaning, somebody came over from a kid from Vanderbilt University came over and screaming, "There's the first COVID case in Nashville. Oh my God." It was in Vanderbilt, and we were like, all right, see ya. We grabbed our stuff and we just went and, you know, closed ourselves in the house. And that was, for me, the beginning of writing the record because I had nothing else to do. Everything got canceled. And I was just left alone in my house in Nashville with no possibility whatsoever to go back home because of COVID, but also because... previous legislation in the United States stopped a green card process. Yep. So I had to wait for current legislations to give me my green card because I was blocked and kidnapped for 2 years, basically. And, but that was needed because if that didn't happen, I would have not write this record as it is. And so Worth It, I was actually remember sitting down outside in my front yard. And just legitimately having my first existential crisis. You know, there's time in a moment in everybody's life when you cross existentialist thoughts. It just happened. There's people that have maybe a background that they know what's the lingo and how to sit down with yourself and analyze what's going on. And there are people that they don't know what's happening. They're just like... I had the lingo and I had the background and still I didn't understand nothing of what was happening within
that
myself,
actually that kind of gives me comfort because at that time I didn't understand what was going on either. And I'm just like, because it was such a weird, but I can't imagine what it's like for you to have almost been, I'm not going to say trapped, but trapped.
It was. No, it's actually correct. We always, when me and Ron talked about it to, you know, friends or people that ask, because so many people always ask me about my immigration process and what happened and how it was. And the only way that I can say it was actually a violation of privacy and no, you know, no, there was really not lots of humanity behind it. And I was physically trapped in a place with no possibility for me to leave.
Yeah.
And, you know, I remember my mom calling me and telling me how Italy was and telling me that everything was, you know, starting to close up. And then when it happened in Nashville, we were for a moment peaceful, like surrendering to the thing. We were like, all right, our show got canceled. There's nothing to do. We're just going to stay here. We're just going to create and make music and make meals and hang out in our backyard, because likely enough, we had one. You know, think about being in New York.
Oh, I was. I am. I know exactly what that was like.
You know, and oh, but even in Philadelphia, it would be, I would have blown my head off. But in Nashville, I could have gone for a walk. Mm-hmm. I could. It was okay because I have trees right behind my, but you know, for the first couple of months, nobody went out because you didn't even know if you could braid the hair outside. But once you figured that that was possible, we were like, okay, we're kind of in a pretty okay bubble right now. We should just have to be healthy. And then that led me to write music, that type of music, because I just sitting down and I started wondering so many questions. They came out through my head like, all right, you're 26. You're here now. You're almost 27. Actually, yeah, Jesus. If I think about it in retrospect, I'm almost 31 right now. But like, and I was just, what is this for? But not what COVID is for. This in a more general thing. And this also reconnected to the question everybody asked me, why the Christian things and the name. It's not really Christian. I just choose Santa Chiara because my name is Chiara. My brother's name is Francesco. So there are the two saints, Santa Chiara, San Francesco, which everybody in Italy knows.
Yeah.
And so it, for me, it was just easy. I went to the Monastero of Santa Chiara when I was waiting for my visa to be, you know, issued when I was in Naples, because the consulate was there. Right. And there was a traumatic experience. I had to stick like 5 vaccine in my arm in the same day and do blood work and do check for everything and scan me and making sure that I wasn't bringing into the US some weird things, you know. I was bringing something into the US now, you know, because all immigrants are brutal. Apparently, but I'm gonna get canceled after this. But the thing is,
did you at least smuggle like some cans of like San Marzano tomatoes? Like, did you at least bring some of those? No, no.
You know that one time my mom sent me a package and it didn't arrive, didn't came through the customs security.
Really?
Yeah. Now you know what we do now. We just put stuff in the suitcases.
Yeah, that's it. That's all.
That's what everybody does.
I mean, I'm not saying I've brought in kilos of cheese, but I'm not saying I haven't brought in kilos of cheese.
I've done it. I don't know. Nobody cares. I've done it. It's fine. Bring your Parmigiano here. Make it happen. You know, my mom's Parmigiano, she go get it for me. That's her love.
That's it.
You know, what am I doing? Am I not bringing it? Sure, I'll bring it.
Gosh, you have to bring it. And I'm going to come to Philadelphia and I'm going to have some.
Yes. But because, you know, if you want to, you could go buy it here. But why? You have your mom getting you like this big of a piss. You want that.
Yes.
And yeah. And then, but yeah, the writing music at that point, it was just for me like tons of questions that were running through my head about what is the purpose for me to be alive right now? Is there anyone? Or it's just like me going through motions all the time and just like let that happen. And I needed to have a divine connection for me in order to go through that time of my life. Because reading psychology books, like legitimate my university textbooks, wasn't helping me anymore.
So funny enough, I had similar. So my wife was like, you should read, like, she gave me like a few like anti-anxiety books to read. And I'm like, Mara, this is making it worse. Like, this is, I can't fucking read any of this stuff. Like, I was just
It
like, no.
actually did it. It actually didn't make it worse for me too, because I was reading this giant book. It was like a huge essay about existential crisis and how like examine them. It's not like you have to have a medical background in order for it to read it.
Right.
It's like a proper thing. I remember being halfway through and be like, I need to grab a guitar and figure out what to do right now. That was the only thing that I actually, and so I sit down, and the only words that were coming out were this: if it was worth it or not, if nobody was seeing what I was doing. But I don't think that anybody's seeing what I'm doing. Maybe I'll still try. Maybe you'll get it. Maybe you won't get it. Is that worth it to me doing it? I don't know, but as the time was it me.
Well,
But I'm still doing it because afterwards, every day I'm alive again, and that's a good opportunity.
I love that. And it's also,
So,
you followed your heart, which a lot of people don't do. You followed your heart to come here. You met your husband. You followed your husband here. You followed your heart to for your career. So
yeah.
I mean, that is something that just be super proud of. That's incredible. If anything, just that, which, because a lot of, there are so many people that I meet that never follow their heart. They'll follow their wallet, they'll follow their brain, they'll follow all the things.
I'm so bad at that. I'm the
But
most like
you did
not
something
practical
for
person on the
yourself.
planet.
Yeah, but you did, but and you're here. And after all, welcome to America. You're in Philadelphia. It's, the city of independence. That was it. It's interesting though, like seeing how, again, this journey that we've talked about, your musical journey, your life journey, your soccer journey, all of this, it's now, it's happening. It's all happening now, and you're all seeing it. And there are things that, for you, do you like, what is next for you now? Like, what happens?
Great question. That's a wonderful question, and I don't have answer for it. No, I'm
That's
even
fine.
the record is about to come out, so I'm assuming that I'm gonna have to go play.
I like that.
I'm also fortunate enough to play bass for my husband band, so that's, that's, I'm happy to be a bass player also, not just my own artist, because I love playing bass and I love playing my instruments, all of them. But I guess where I'm gonna start making more music, because after I sit for a little bit with music and it's been done, it started to itch me that I have to do more, because I get bored very easily about things. So now I'm like, well, this record's done, let's do another one. And I'm also trying to figure out, if to be completely frank and honest, how long can I live here? I'm trying to see if I want to move back, if we want to move back to Nashville. I'm trying to see if we want to stay here, where is the best place for us to be in order for me to feel, sometimes when you are European, I'm not saying Italian because I don't want to, there might be other Europeans that are feeling the same way. So saying when you're Italian and you move to the States, I think it's not enough. It's better to say when you're a European born and raised and you move to the United States, it's jarring to adapt. And it feels for me that I feel very often as if I were, a big tree. I got eradicated, planted in a huge pot, but it might be too big.
I see. Yeah.
So I need to feel, you see what I'm saying? The US
Need to find your
sometimes
little
people,
garden.
yes, I need to do that. And I don't know where is the right place for me to do it, how it's the right place for me to do it. You know, I've been from Italy to Nashville and then from Nashville to Philly. And I feel like it's good for me to do an experience in the city, but am I a city person? Maybe not. But am I a full, complete landlocked person? Also, maybe not. I've been to the West Coast multiple times. Can I do West Coast? Hell no. So it's difficult.
It's talking like a true East Coaster.
Well, it's difficult. You see what I'm saying? Like, I got planted right here. So now I can really... I love the panorama. I love, you know, I love the canyons. I love the desert. I love the desert. But I don't feel myself at ease to live in the West Coast. I'm like trying to figure where is it that I can actually feel, okay, I'm an Italian, but I can do this.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense?
Absolutely. Because Italy is, it's obviously so much smaller than America, but it's still a big country. And the fact that like all those regions are so different, America is like, it's 50 states, yes, but it's 50 different countries when you think about it.
Yeah.
Each place is different. As much as like Philly might be similar to New York, it's not. And as much as Pennsylvania might be similar to New York, it's not. And New Jersey, it's not. It's like everything is their own unique thing, the dialect, language, all of that, you know, it's all similar. Italy is just a microcosm of it. And I will say though, like, as it's a strange place, America is a strange place, but there is something really charming and beautiful about it. And I think you can find it. It's just a matter of like, it's somewhere.
Yeah.
And I don't know where, but it's somewhere for you.
Yeah, and maybe also a matter of finding a good balance between a little bit of everything, you know. But it's very difficult. It's very difficult. Sometimes I look at places and I'm like, oh, well, you go out of Philly and you start driving in the middle of Pennsylvania and it looks like Kentucky. What the hell? How is it possible? But then you like, you know, there's beautiful places in the middle of Virginia. And then you're like, oh, this is wonderful to see, but it's Virginia. And then you go, it's like, it's complicated.
It is complicated. I mean, look, if all else fails, and this is what I always say to everybody, just go to Miami and go hang out with Messi. That's it. Like, that's it. Miami's always like my, if you don't like it, just go to Miami. That's it.
Is it good? I've never been to.
It is. So look, there's a Miami for everybody. Let's put it that way. There is a Miami for it. If you are broke, there's a Miami for you. If you are opulent and over the top and Gianni Versace, that's why he moved there. There's Miami for you. If you are Lionel Messi, there's Miami for you. If you love the beach, but also love cities like myself, then Miami is for you. Like, you can go from your office or apartment and just walk right on the beach. And yeah, you can do the same thing in California, but California, you got to drive everywhere. Whereas Miami, it's just there. Yes. Just right there.
Yeah, that's the other thing. We were just in Los Angeles. And I was like, did how people do this?
Oh, it takes that was
3 hours. They 3 hours ago from one side to the other one. And okay, you had the canyon, you see the canyon, but Jesus Lord, how do you do that?
Yeah.
You're wasting your life in your car.
Your car, yeah. I mean, I'm not going to disparage the West Coast listeners because they could just be listening to this podcast in their car.
No, but I encourage
you to drive. I encourage you to keep driving and keep listening.
Now time for a coffee break.
Curva Mundial is sponsored by Mod Cup Coffee in Jersey City, but you can get it anywhere in the world from modcup.com. Mod Cup, drink modern coffee. Use code MUNDIAL for 10% off your first order.
We are now in the final stretch of the interview. I've got 3 rapid fire questions to ask you.
I'm scared.
Don't be scared. Don't be scared. I promise. It's very easy. Very good. And they're going to pertain to Torino, Grande Torino.
Yes.
If you could bring back one retired player to your club, alive or dead, who would it be and why?
My uncle Ernesto.
All right. Did he play for Torino?
Yeah, no, but he didn't play for Torino itself, but he played, and it was in the immediate close.
I love how like he got you into this team so much. Now, also, I want to point something out too that we didn't actually talk about early. We talked about it before I hit record. You come from a big family of Torino supporters, but there are a couple Juventini. What's that dichotomy like?
Well, unfortunately, they're not alive anymore.
Oh, okay.
But at the time when they were alive, God bless their heart, it was funny. It was actually, it was funny because, everybody was from Torino, everybody, besides those two people.
Mm.
And one was my mom's sister husband, and he was from Juventus.
Mm-hmm.
He was like a dreamer to be like the American dream sort of, but in Italian version. So it makes sense for him to be from Juventus.
I get it.
Really wanted it. Like you wouldn't have a double-breasted blazer. You really
right. Wear the Rolex over the sleeve and all that.
You want to do it. And then there's a different. I always have those type of conversations with people from the family and friends also, because you know there's this division. There is a proletarian touring,
mm-hmm.
then there is the radical chic touring, and then there is the very posh and rich that they go into Juventus, and that was it. But our family wasn't that. I mean, the people that team up with Juventus, they weren't like rich posh people. They just liked the team because they wanted to be part of a team that win.
Okay.
That was it. I want to win, and that was the spirit that they carry. But for us, for me, it was like, I don't care about winning. I want to see that they try. I want to see that they do it. And since when that happened, since the 40s, once they reached the good team, that was it. They've done it. How many times did they win? Four times?
It was four in a row. And then Superga, the unfortunate air disaster.
Yeah. So they have this magic moment. They have this magic moment that it will be always recognized in the history of soccer, football, call it how you want to call it. It will always be also recognized all over the world. There's a movie about it. There's books. Name of cars. There is so much about it. There is where is it? In I think it's in Williamsburg. There is a Gran Torino, a place called Gran Torino.
Really?
Yes, which I saw it. I took a picture. I was like, oh my goodness.
Oh, okay.
And that was a big thing. And I remember being like watching the derby.
Yeah.
Watching like that and just try it and just be like, yeah, you guys, when they were back in Serie A, when they were back there, I was like, yes, you could do it. And even if you don't do it, you made it this far. You made it here. You're in the same series right now with Juventus, Milan, in Inter. You're here. You're doing it. You're doing good. And that was a good feeling. And it's always, yeah.
No, that kind of seems to like sum up like the fan base of Torino. Like just try. Yeah. Just put on a great show.
It just yes. And also, well, I want to say true. I want to say it's true that there's also a radical chic fan base to it.
Okay.
You know, the intellectual, the one that watched Nanni Moretti's movie. I don't know. I'm one of these, maybe. That's fine. We love it. We love the maestro. We like that. The intellectual, the politically involved people, the people that are like, yes, we're here to fight. I'm not talking about my political things, but you understand what I'm saying.
You probably got it.
You
know how you're the listeners in Philadelphia will also understand too, because there's a similarity amongst Philadelphia sports fans and Torino fans. See how passionate anytime the Philadelphia Phillies play. And similar colors, but it's like, it's just keep going.
Well, the Phillies actually did very good.
Yeah, they lost a few years ago. Yeah,
they lost it. It was very sad last year, and I was very upset because I like baseball, but also the Eagles, think about it. Aren't they a very, like you know, underdog. They're really like, yeah, you know, they're not that good, but they're actually good. They can
So,
do it. They can.
It's basketball, same. It's, yeah, it's, you have, there's a similarity that granita, if you will, is that, you know, is that passion is in both,
Yes.
and it kind of connects both cities in terms of sports fans.
Yeah, and I mean the symbol. Do you know about the Tourette?
No.
It's the symbol of the city. You know that it's a bull, right?
Oh, I always thought it was a little horse. So it's a
It's
bull.
a bull because Torino, it means toro, which it
Toro.
means bull. And then all over the city there are those things
Of
where you can
course.
drink the fountain that you can
Yeah.
drink out of it. They're called Tourette because they're little. It's in Piedmont dialect, it means like tiny little
I never made the
bull.
connection.
Yeah, it's so sweet. Every time I think about it, I'm like, oh, maybe I'll get a tattoo about it. I don't know.
Okay. All
But
right.
that's very sweet.
I love
There's
it.
a power to it because it's a bull, so he can
Yeah.
do it. But you know.
That's it. Sometimes there's the matador, but that's okay.
Yeah,
Do both. Yeah, that's all right. I
it's
got
up and down.
it's up and down. Two more questions for you. So
Yes.
we're playing fantasy football. We have an infinite amount of money. Don't worry about money here. If there is an active player today that you wish could sign for Torino, who would it be?
Del Piero. I wish he wasn't retired. I don't know. I mean, like, let's be honest. Let's be honest. That was it. That was it.
You
Del
would still
Piero.
want to get the team out of retirement, Del Piero and Buffon.
I know they were the best. Think about it. Well,
Well, since we do have an
seriously.
infinite amount of money,
Oh, you know
maybe
what?
we could throw money at them and they would
There's
come play.
also Cannavaro. Did anybody remember how good he was?
Ballon d'Or winner.
Dude, that team was fantastic. That
So,
was and Mater, they were all good.
but I love how where you're going with this because you took the money question and you're just going to pay for them to come out of retirement and play. I love
Yes.
that's why not?
Just for fun, just to be like, do you remember how fantastic that was? Do you want to be that fantastic? You were from Juventus, which is the rival. Do you want to be in the Gran Torino in the 40s? But you're retired. I need a time machine. I
All
use the
right,
money
back
for
to
the time machine to do
the
that. They were fantastic player.
Oh man. All right. So now, since you do go to the West Coast a lot for tour, have you gone to Del Piero's restaurant in LA?
No, I have not, but I know that exists.
Yeah. And
So
he hangs out
maybe.
there. He hangs out there. You're not gonna see him at the
Does
grocery
it?
store, but he does. He
Is
hangs out there.
this like Jack White? No, he does. I
Oh no,
know
he
him.
actually go no. But Jack actually oh, I spent the Jack actually goes to the place. No, but Del Piero actually hangs out at his own restaurant.
Nice.
So the
Maybe
next time you're in LA, maybe go pay him a visit.
I'll
Then, you know, slip him the name of the podcast and say, hey, look,
Yeah,
come on.
I will do it. I'll
Thanks.
be
I
like, hey, you
appreciate
know, this guy is very good.
that. Thanks. And finalmente, what has been your favorite moment as a fan of this game?
Of soccer, of
Yeah.
like that. When we win the World Cup and my
That was six.
entire city exploded. It was like legitimately, there was no way of moving. And everybody was singing 20 they were singing 20 National Army.
Oh, it's
It
amazing.
was fantastic. I was so little. I was little. And everybody was playing. Everybody was playing. And there was like flags all over. We're not very like, but we don't really put flags all over like people do in the US. We don't really do it. That time,
Different story.
yes. Yes, it was great. It was awesome. That was it. I remember went to the we have a place in Ravenna called Rocca Brancaleone, which is the old castle with the, you know. And I went to watch it. I watched a part at home and we went over there and then we were just like running through the center and it was great. It was fantastic. Didn't came back because they never win again. So sad. They'll do it. They'll
I
do it.
hope so. Just I hope
They'll
so.
do it.
Let's see. Let's see.
Maybe
Well,
Messi will change nationality.
maybe, yeah. Let's yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe we just go to Santa Chiara, pray a
I'll
little bit.
pray a little bit. Yeah. Thank
Chiara, thank you so very much for
you
all
for
this.
having me.
This was so much fun. Thank you again.
Likewise. Yeah. Thank you.
Follow us on Twitter at Curva Mundial Pod and subscribe to us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Thanks for listening. Curva Mundial listeners can get 20% off their next order at Football Devotion. For football designs with a difference, head over to footballdevotion.com and use code CURVA for 20% off your order. That's code CURVA.